Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Welcome back, folks. We are very fortunate to have Dr. Joe Cantor, the state health officer for the state of Louisiana, take time out of his busy schedule to join us every Thursday at this hour. And we appreciate that for sure. Dr. Cantor, welcome to the show.
Hey, thank you, Noel. It's nice to be back with you.
Doc, I know you have your finger on the pulse of our numbers here around the state. I think we're, what, 9 regions in the state of Louisiana, if my memory serves me correct?
That's right, 9 regions. Region number 1 is the greater New Orleans region. And we're in an interesting place right now. We're seeing increases in cases statewide in our total state numbers and individually in each of those 9 regions. We were very, very low, you know, for the past 3 months since we recovered from the initial Omicron surge, which peaked in late January and then came down. Now we're seeing increases again. We've been increasing for about 3 weeks or so. Mild increases, but the number of new tests coming back are going up that are positive. Percent positivity is going up. It's up to 3.1% now. I was 2% last week, although that's still 3.1% is still a relatively low number for us. We're seeing wastewater surveillance, which is a new modality, indicate increased COVID. So every indication is pointing to there's more COVID and that cases are growing. I think if you talk to people, there's more people getting COVID. People know that, so that feels accurate to people. Now, what is interesting is, as of yet, hospitalizations have not really gone up. Now, that's not to say they won't, you know, down the road if this becomes a full surge. But they've not yet really gone up. We're at 67 now. That's a low number for us. Only 4 of those patients are on mechanical ventilators. That's a marker that the clinical acuity is not very high right now. So interesting here is this will be, if this turns into a surge, and I don't know if it will or not. Right now, it's just the beginnings of mild increases. If it does turn into a surge, we're going to watch the acuity, the hospitalizations, very, very closely. If this becomes an event where there's a lot of cases, a lot of transmission, but not a lot of severe disease, not a lot of hospitalizations, then this will really mark, you know, the transition, I think, from the earlier part of the pandemic where we had high acuity to what we hope the next part will be, where we can ride, so to say, new increases in cases without being concerned about overwhelming our hospitals. I think there's a very good chance of that happening, which would be the best case scenario now, but we're going to have to watch very closely and see what happens.
Doc, do we know, is there a demographic where we're seeing more of these increases?
We are, and it holds fairly close to what we've seen in prior increases, where it tends to increase first in young adults, people between the age of around 18 to 30 or so, and then you see it go down a little bit to the younger kids as well. And then a couple of weeks after that, you can expect to see it spread to older individuals. That's just an average. I can tell you that there's people getting infected right now of all ages, but we do see the highest numbers in people of that kind of 18 to 30-year-old age group. And one thought of that is that there's tend to be the individuals that are just out and about more, going out more, going to restaurants, going to bars, those sorts of things. That's one theory. But what we've experienced in other increases is it doesn't stay limited to those age individuals for very long.
Concerns about waning immunity?
Yes. Yeah, for sure. On both accounts, both for people that are vaccinated and both for people that have protection from being infected in the past, we know that immunity wanes on both of those accounts. It's sometimes difficult to quantify. It's easiest to quantify now for people that are vaccinated. And this is really speaks to the importance of getting, if you've not gotten your first booster shot, I think now is very much the time to do it. There's very good data now showing that when you're 5, 6, 7 months out, or more from getting vaccinated, your protection decreases. It decreases even more when you think about it in terms of this new Omicron and the BA.2 variant, which is so different from the ancestral strain which the vaccines were based on. So you have a new variant that's genetically mutated and not an exact match, and you have that much more elapsed time for the protection to wane, and the protections go down. What the data has shown is people that get that first booster shot, their protection against severe disease and death, which is what we really care about, goes back up to pretty close to what it was earlier. They still have a little bit less protection against getting infected in the first place, and we're seeing a lot of people who are vaccinated and even boosted get infected, but they're not getting very sick, and that's the most important thing. I think the take-home message really, and again, I'm saying this with emphasis because we're now, again, seeing increases of cases. We're seeing, you know, this could be the beginning of the surge. We have to wait and see what happens. But if you've not gotten your first booster shot, I think now is a very, very advantageous time to do it.
Anything about the variant? I mean, is it consistent to the variant that we have been seeing, or is there anything?
You know, we're a couple weeks behind national trends on this. So, you know, our big surge in January and February was the Omicron variant. And then after that, we saw a predominance. We still do see a predominance of the BA.2 subvariant. And of all the COVID in the U.S. right now, 99% of it is BA.2, a subvariant of Omicron. And that's the same in Louisiana. What we're a couple of weeks behind on is this subvariant of BA.2, the BA.2.12.1. And I think I apologize for people getting lost. I think, you know, there's an infinite number of variants. I think this gets somewhat repetitive. But this particular subvariant of the subvariant, the BA.2.12.1, is 43% of cases nationally. It's only 22-23% of cases in Louisiana. It seems to be more transmissible. There are other places in the country that are experiencing increases that are beyond what we're experiencing now. I think we'll get there in a couple weeks. So that's likely explaining why we're seeing the beginnings of increases. But in the grand scheme of things, that's not surprising. We're going to continuously see new variants because that's what this virus does. You know, the question is whether the protections that we have, and I'll remind people, at this point in time in Louisiana, 95% of us have either been infected already, been vaccinated, or both. 95%. The question is going to be if that protection, that cumulative protection, is going to be enough to weather increases in cases without having it result in a lot of clinical acuity, a lot of sickness, a lot of hospitalizations. I think there's a very good chance of that being the case, and we'll be fortunate if so. But again, that's not, I can't say that absolutely. We have to wait and see what happens.
I was looking at some national data over the last couple of days. It seems to be following the same pattern as what occurred back in 2020, that it's kind of hitting the urban areas first, more so than in the rural areas. Is that your understanding?
It is, and we saw the first area to really see the beginnings of this increase was the New Orleans area here. Now, whether that was connected to French Quarter Fest, I mean, I'm probably exacerbated a little bit by Jazz Fest, it it's tough to say because, again, as you point out, that trend plays out in other urban areas that did not host large festivals this past month. But the cases began to increase first in the New Orleans area. The New Orleans area has a higher percent positivity than most other places in the state right now. That's not terribly different from what we saw in some prior surges, but it tends to even out statewide very, very quickly. So while New Orleans is ahead right now by a little bit, I would not expect that to be the case 1 or 2 weeks down the road. I think the rest of the state is going to catch up very quickly.
Now, one of the anomalies is that, as you pointed out, and this data nationally kind of bears it out, in the first wave back in 2020, it was the older folks that got infected first, but that's kind of flipped. And I guess that probably has a lot to do with vaccination rates of the older age as well as booster rates of the older population.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, in particularly in the nursing home settings, you know, thinking back to the very, very first wave, you know, two years ago and change, the virus just blew through nursing homes. There were minimal protections. No one was vaccinated at that point in time. And we saw a ton of cases in nursing home residents and a lot of mortality. Now nursing homes are very good at controlling the spread. They're very good at quarantining off when they have a case. They do regular testing that helps identify cases before they spread to larger outbreaks. And most importantly, the vaccination rate in our nursing homes is very good. Of nursing home residents right now in Louisiana, 91% of them have at least one dose, and 89% of them have two doses. 70% of them have two doses plus a booster. So that's well ahead of what the general population rates are. And I think that helps protect the nursing homes when we have these very, very infectious variants, you know, more infectious than the earlier strands like we're dealing with now.
Yeah. All right, let's get to a break. 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text Line. We're visiting with Dr. Joe Cantor, the state health officer for the state of Louisiana. We will be right back after the break, folks. Stay with us.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
We're back. We're visiting with Dr. Joe Cantor, state health officer for the state of Louisiana. We're talking about, I guess, the state of the state, the state of the country as it relates to COVID-19. Doc, I get this text every now and again. We hadn't talked about it in a while because I thought most people were on board on this notion, but I'm just going to go ahead and do it. By definition, the text says the COVID-19 vaccine is not a vaccine because it does not provide immunity from COVID. So I'm going to go out on a limb. Wrong. Am I right?
You're right. It's a false statement. You know, there's a concept in immunology called sterilizing immunity. And sterilizing immunity is the ability of a vaccine or any type of immunity, you know, natural immunity to not only prevent against severe disease, but also prevent 100% or close to it, the infection itself. There are some vaccines that do confer sterilizing immunity, and this is by virtue of what type of virus it is and other qualities. the measles vaccine typically provides sterilizing immunity. There are a couple other ones out there. That's the hope, but not a lot of vaccines actually meet that bar. The COVID vaccine certainly does not meet that bar, does not provide sterilizing immunity, meaning we do see people that are vaccinated get infected with COVID. What it does do is protect against severe disease, which is the more important thing. The larger point to make is there are a number of other vaccines, very common vaccines that, you know, we give to school kids, that are on the school schedule, that are very commonplace, that similar to the COVID vaccine, protect against severe disease, but do not provide that sterilizing immunity. I'll give you some examples. The mumps vaccine, which is typically given as part of the MMR series, with measles and rubella. The pertussis or whooping cough vaccine. Both of those two, just like COVID, do a really, really good job of protecting against severe disease. We don't see people that are vaccinated against pertussis and mumps get very sick, but we do see them get infected sometimes, and that's expected. You know, people will remember over the past 4 or 5, maybe 6 years, we've had a couple of mumps outbreaks at LSU's campus, almost exclusively amongst fully vaccinated students. And that's what mumps does, particularly in a very close congregate setting like a dorm. It can spread rather quickly amongst even vaccinated people, but no one got that sick. That's the important thing. So COVID vaccine is the same way. Would we like it to provide sterilizing immunity and block the infection itself? Well, of course we would. Of course we would. And there was some hope it would, but it clearly doesn't. Does it provide protection against severe disease just like other vaccines of this nature? It absolutely does. And that's the more important thing, because that's what keeps people out of the hospital.
And that's referred to as functional immunity, right?
Absolutely. So functional immunity or protection against severe disease. And again, I wish that the COVID vaccine provided sterilizing immunity like the measles vaccine does, but it doesn't.
But the truth be told, Doc, is that very few of those vaccines reach the level of sterilizing immunity in and of itself. And what I mean by that is that the deployment of the vaccine very much influences the efficacy levels that are reached within a community, right?
That's absolutely right. And what type of outbreak is going on? So, you know, there's not a lot of measles, you know, if any measles right now in our country. And so, of course, you're not, you know, I'm vaccinated. Most people are vaccinated against measles. We're not seeing a lot of breakthrough infections because there's no measles around. But if you were to take 100 vaccinated people against measles and drop them in into the middle of a big measles outbreak, even though it traditionally does provide sterilizing, you might see some breakthrough cases. It's totally possible.
Well, we have.
Look at that.
If I'm wrong, in this state, we have seen that, right?
We have seen that. Yeah. Now, again, you know, you never know what type of immune response one person gets from a vaccine, because some people have suppressed immune systems. They might be technically vaccinated, but not actually get the right protection from it. But, you know, this all or nothing mindset is rarely true in medicine. It's certainly not true in the world of vaccines.
Yeah. I hate to waste time, but it's just important because I hear this every now and again. I get into debates with folks about this, and I'm just kind of like, go educate yourself, read about this. I did. In fact, I have a little sheet here that reminds me of this so that I don't forget, because, you know, we think in terms of you take the shot, you're okay. That's not necessarily true. So, Doc, I wanted to cover the White House is asking for $22.5 billion in emergency aid to continue funding responses to the pandemic. They are pointing to some of their internal studies within the CDC and others, I should say not studies, but models, and have thrown out a 100 million figure as the number of Americans who may become infected with Omicron during a potential wave in December and January. Obviously, modeling is an art, for sure. Have you looked at this, and where are they pulling this data from that they believe that this is a likelihood in the winter months?
I have. I'm not entirely sure what their sources are, and I actually had a conversation with one of the members of the White House team last night, and he also wasn't terribly sure what the arithmetic was, but I'll tell you, my gut tells me that it's not out of the realm of possibility. I'll tell you why I say that. You know, we think that close to half the population of Louisiana got Omicron during this past wave. Because our seroprevalence rates were around 35-40% before Omicron, and after Omicron, seroprevalence of people that were infected with COVID are up to around 70% in Louisiana. So, I mean, probably somewhere between a third or a half of the population got it. So if you extrapolate that out to the population of the U.S., you know, over 300 mil, I mean, it's not out of the realm of possibility. It's quite possible. I mean, I think the larger question is what type of severity of disease would accompany those infections. And I'll tell you, the White House doesn't know the answer to this either. Like us here, they hope that with the broad protections the public has now, with prior exposure and vaccination, that we will be reasonably protected against severe disease in the event of a surge like that, you know, barring some crazy variant that just evades all the protections. That's the hope. It's a reasonable expectation. But the White House doesn't have much more to go on than we do here. So I think that's what's behind, you know, their push. If we could be guaranteed right now that, you know, even if we have a future surge like that with 100 million people getting infected, which I don't think is impossible. I think it's a reasonable thing to predict. If we could be reasonably assured that that would happen without a lot of clinical severity, without the hospitals getting overrun, I would feel much more comfortable with the state of funding that we have right now. You know, I think that would further signify this transition to endemic and relaxing of the level of alarm that we've had the past couple of years. But again, I don't think we can be assured of that until it actually happens. And again, from my conversation last night, the White House is very much in the same boat. They don't have a crystal ball on this either.
So this clinical acuity question then is really the one that's perplexing folks. It's hard to get your hands, your head around it, figure it out, because you just never know until, I guess, you're in the midst of it.
That's right. That's right. I mean, you know, if we weather one or two surges without having a lot of clinical acuity, then I think we will be much more relaxed. You know, I mean, if COVID becomes like a cold where people get it, but most people will just, you know, take a couple of days off work and do fine, that's not a big deal. That's not something that we have to, you know, allocate $22 billion for and do everything else. But I think it's still presumptuous right now to say that's definitely going to happen. I think there's a good chance it's going to happen, but you know, this virus has been real wily. You know, we've had throughout the 2 years and change, the mortality of cases, the chance that you're going to die from COVID in Louisiana has gone down considerably, from 5-6% down to, you know, well below 1%. And that's the combination of a lot of factors. It's people having COVID in the past and having protection, people getting vaccinated, doctors knowing more about how to treat patients, and now having treatment available, medicines to give people. That trend will continue and, I believe, further decrease the mortality, I think, you know. But I think you have to wait a little bit to actually prove that concept before you rely on it.
Yeah, I just hope they're very careful about their messaging. you know, not to bring the political context into it, but you know the level of skepticism out there. We have midterms that we're facing in the fall, and I guarantee you people are connecting dots right now. If they misstep on this, they are going to lose the public. And if we do face a situation where clinical acuity shifts to be a challenge, this could get butt ugly fast.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, you know, from my perspective, the White House is getting hit on both sides right now. There's a vocal camp that's saying that they're, you know, claiming victory too early on the pandemic. And then there's a vocal camp that's saying, you know, move on already. And I think they're, I mean, you know, my sense is they're trying to walk, you know, do the best they can with the real big uncertainty. And the real big uncertainty is, you know, there's nothing 100% preventing some very new variant that's completely different that will evade our protection. That's a possibility. We think it's not terribly likely. But, I mean, I'll tell you again, the White House doesn't have much better predictive data than we do here for that. You know, they have to respond to what's happening the same way that we are.
Doug, let's pivot. A lot of folks got a lot of text already this morning. These mysterious hepatitis cases that are showing up around the world, not just here in the United States. Any gut as to this?
Doesn't seem to be related to COVID or the vaccine. That's the first thing. It's strange. You know, I'll kind of give you some background. So there's been young kids, and a lot of them were younger than 10, who got hepatitis, which is inflammation of the liver. There was a large cluster, 8 or 9 people identified in Alabama over the past 2 years. And some of them were very sick. A few of them needed a liver transplant, which is a drastic measure. There was a larger cluster of about 100 people or so in the UK. And this prompted the WHO and the CDC to put out notice. What we believe is that it's linked to infection of a type of adenovirus, adenovirus-41. Adenovirus is one of many common cold viruses. It's been around forever. Most of us, if not all of us, have had a type of adenovirus, if not many types of adenovirus in the past. And most of the time, you get a cold and not much more. But for some reason, it's causing potentially severe liver damage in a very small handful of kids. We don't know why. Most of these kids are too young to get the vaccine, so there's clearly no connection to the COVID vaccine. Some had COVID in the past, some didn't, so it doesn't seem to be connected to getting COVID itself. There might be some relationship to, you know, a lot of kids did not get exposed to the common school or daycare viruses in the first year of COVID because they were home. And now they're getting exposed now. That might be something to do with it, but it's unclear. We've identified 4 possible cases in Louisiana, but none of them really fit the exact description of what has been seen in Alabama and the UK. One did not type positive for adenovirus. They typed positive for a different type of virus, so we don't think that they're really in the same bucket. And the other 3 were identified by us retrospectively, meaning once the notice came out from the CDC, we went back to our surveillance networks and identified 3 kids who had similar symptoms, but they've since recovered. And so there was no way to test them if they had adenovirus back then. So we don't know, and we probably won't know. That's where it stands now. We've asked every clinician in the state to identify and report to us in the health department if they have a kid that fits this description, and we'll communicate with the CDC if that happens. But there's really not much more information known right now. It's a very strange phenomenon. It's not usual for a kid to get this type of liver inflammation to the point that, you know, some of them need a transplant, which is a very drastic measure.
Have they been identified as the same type? I think they're, what, 5 different types of hepatitis?
Well, there's
A, B, C, you know. In fact, I remember one of my teachers in grammar school got hepatitis. I think it was D. They had us all tested. He ended up missing the entire school year. They had to bring in a substitute teacher. He had traveled overseas and contracted it.
Not exactly. What you're referring to is viral hepatitis. You know, hepatitis just means inflammation of the liver.
Right.
And you can have hepatitis from a virus like Hep A, Hep B, Hep C, Hep D, Hep E, which is what you're referring to. You can also have hepatitis from being an alcoholic. You can have hepatitis from having autoimmune diseases. Those other forms of hepatitis are not related to the viruses of Hep A, Hep B, Hep C, and so forth.
But in kids this age, it's more likely viral, right?
Well, viral, but this adenovirus, one of the things to qualify as a potential case of what we're talking about, they have to rule out the common causes of hepatitis. And Hep A, Hep B, Hep C, Hep D, and E are all the common causes. So all of these potential cases had liver inflammation, but were negative for Hep A, Hep B, Hep C, and Hep D.
Oh, really? Oh, okay.
Yeah. That, so it's something new. It's something
that's
new.
That's kind
that
of interesting. I mean, that's interesting, isn't it? I mean, that's
so
different.
It's very, yeah. It's different. Again, we've not seen this before. And, you know, it's, we always get new things. You know, the public health keeps you on your toes. Yeah. But this is concerning. I mean, again, this is not
not that your plate's number. Not full already, but I mean,
right, overflow it. I don't want to alarm people because the numbers we're seeing are not big. I mean, these are
right.
relatively small numbers, but you know, a handful of these kids got very, very sick and required intensive care. So it's going to be important to learn more information. There's really nothing to do about it right now if you're a family, and we don't really know what's going on, and so. There's not much to do other than the normal cold precautions. Don't, you know, if someone around you and your family is sick, you know, try and keep them away from the rest of your family. That's the best thing to do right now, we think.
Right. All right, we got to get to a break. 504-260-1870. We're visiting with Dr. Joe Cantor, state health officer for the state of Louisiana. Stay with us, folks. We'll be right back.
Hey, Rob Bradford here. I have set out on a mission with my good friends at FanDuel to prove what I have known for some time. Baseball isn't boring. Now I have a daily podcast to prove it with some of the most notable people in the baseball world screaming baseball isn't boring from the mountaintops, or at least agreeing to come on our show. Players, managers, GMs, and yes, even the commissioner of baseball, Rob Manfred. It has been a constant wave of baseball's most powerful voices. So join the revolution. Subscribe and soak in Baseball Isn't Boring. Listen on your Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. You'll be glad you did.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Welcome back, folks. A lot of calls and texts coming in. About 30 or so minutes ago, state officials announced that their I-10 eastbound lanes at Williams Boulevard are closed due to a wreck. There are heavy delays on the westbound lanes as well. 18-wheeler is the problem in the eastbound lanes, and drivers should seek out alternative routes if possible. Traffic was backed up almost clear across the Bonnycarry Spillway Bridge as of about 30 minutes ago. So just wanted to give you an update as to that. We're visiting with Dr. Joe Cantor, state health officer for the state of Louisiana. Doc, let's pivot another non-COVID subject. We'll take you away from the COVID talk for right now. You know, but still something that's pretty serious is baby formula shortage. Observations.
Yeah, it's not good. You know, it's connected to what's going on in China, where, you know, we've talked about this, I think, 2 weeks running now, where, you know, China is reacting to their COVID outbreaks with the same type of aggressive closures. You know, I mean, closures of giants. I mean, Shanghai, I mean, that massive city that they closed down in the same way they did earlier in the pandemic, as if nothing has changed, nothing's been learned, or they have no other tools now, which is not true. But in doing so, they create supply chain disruption across the board. And now it's hitting infant formula. On top of that, there was a recall by the FDA of some formula brands that they, which was tainted, so they pulled them back from the market, and so that constricts the supply too. And we think it's going to take about a month for formula manufacturers to compensate for that. So we have shortages now. And I think what families are experiencing is their particular brand that they use might not be available. With this, I think it's important to say, because I don't want people to do the wrong thing and put their babies at jeopardy. It's never a good idea to try and make home formula. It's very challenging to do it right. It has the potential for infections. The chemical balance that in store-bought formula is exact and exactly what a baby needs and certified by the FDA to that. And oftentimes when people try and make these DIY home formulations, they don't get it right. So I would caution and advise in the strongest terms possible not to do that. Instead, just be okay using whatever type of formula is available. There's still formula on the shelves. I was out making groceries yesterday, and there was still formula on the shelves there too. So it's much better to use a different brand right now than to try and do something at home. I also would ask people, try not to just hoard or stock up more than you need. That's going to exacerbate the supply issues too. So we think there's going to be adequate supply. Buy what you normally would. Be okay buying a different brand. You might have to do that for a few weeks before we get more supply. We don't think it's going to get worse than it is now, but it is unfortunate. I know it's a stressor when what you give your baby normally might not be available for a few weeks.
Yeah, so don't go to the internet. Don't go to the DIY, do-it-yourself websites. Not smart at all.
Yeah, no, really, really not smart. We've seen cases of kids coming in with malnutrition. We've seen cases of kids that got too much of one particular substance coming in. It's actually much more harmful than I think people realize. So much better choice just to buy a different brand than to try and do this at home for your kid.
Doc, real quick, we only have about a minute. I'm going to talk about this in my next hour. Some comments that I have about the overdose problem that we have in this country, yeah. Specifically fentanyl. And I know you as an ER physician are probably in a position to have seen some very perplexing cases that have rolled through your doors relative to fentanyl.
Yeah, it's really scary. And for the heroin that's bought on the street right now, almost 100% of it has some amount of fentanyl in it right now. And people that use never know how much is in there. So that's why you see overdoses, is someone injects what they think is a normal amount for them, ends up being on a magnitude more potent because it has some undisclosed amount of fentanyl in there, and they overdose. Points to make, number one, there's a bill going through the legislature right now that has very broad bipartisan support. It's House Bill 212 that will legalize fentanyl test strips as a harm reduction measure for people to use. And I think the larger point is opioid addiction is a medical disease. It's been exacerbated, you know, through the opioid crisis, but it's a medical disease. It has medical solutions. It's not indicative of someone's personality or not indicative of them failing. Addiction is a disease, and they suffer with it. And there is really good treatment available. So if someone in your life struggles with opioid addiction, stay with them, support them the best you can, and continuously try to get them into medical treatment. That's what will save their life.
Absolutely. Doc, thank you so much. We truly appreciate your time and your insight. As always, this hour flew by. Have a great weekend.
Thank you, Noel. You too.
All righty. We'll be right back, folks. All right, folks. When we come back after top of the news break, we'll go open lines. We want to hear from you on any topic that you want to discuss on the Oakland Heart Jewelers talk and text line, 504-260-1870. Stay with us and join us and engage in a conversation.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai. There's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.